From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Across the country, a shortage of baby formula has parents scrambling to figure out how to feed their children. Some are driving hours or recruiting friends and family to track down certain brands. If they do find what they're looking for, they're likely to be met with stores placing limits on how much can be purchased, and that's if they find any at all. Some have resorted to watering down what formula they have or trying homemade recipes. Doctors have warned this is potentially quite dangerous for infants. So, how did this happen? Well, part of the problem has to do with an Illinois-based company called Abbott Nutrition. In February, after reports of bacterial infections and even deaths among children who consume the company's baby formula, Abbott voluntarily recalled Similac and other products made by its factory in Sturgis, Michigan. In a few minutes, we'll talk with two experts on business operations about what led to this shortage and what might be done about it. But first, we're going to talk about how the shortage is affecting families in Illinois. Throughout our conversation, we want to hear from you at 800-222-9455. Maybe you have a new baby in your life, or you've been recruited by a friend or relative to help track down a specific brand of formula. We want to hear what you're going through. 800-222-9455. What are you seeing on shelves, including potentially empty space? 800-222-9455, or tweet us, as ever, at 21st Show. We're joined now by Shauna Ryan, the Community Outreach Coordinator at the Southern Seven Health Department, which serves the lower seven counties in Illinois. Shauna, welcome to the 21st Show. I know your time is limited. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So what are you seeing out there? What are you hearing day to day? How are families responding to this shortage?
Well, families in the southern seven counties that we serve are reporting a shortage in our area. And, you know, when you're talking about WIC families, you're talking about individuals who are already having a hard time making ends meet and providing the adequate nutrition that they need for their child. So for them, it's very troubling. You mentioned a shortage throughout the region. What we see down here in the Southern Seven is a lot of these folks, when you look at them, they live in the very, very rural parts of the state of Illinois. For many of them, they already have to travel 20, 30, 40 miles on a regular basis to get food on an everyday situation. So to add this on top of that is even more concerning. So we're working with the families. We're asking them to please contact us if they are seeing a shortage on their everyday shelves. So we can reach out to the state, and the state can then reach out to these retailers to try to get them what they need.
So about half of all U.S. formula consumption goes through the Women, Infants, and Children, or the WIC program. How is the shortage affecting the program in your part of Illinois, served by the Southern Seven Health Department?
Well, Southern Seven serves about 250 to 350 families every month. So for us down here, you are talking about families who are relying on this, not just for 1 or 2 months, but for several months of their child's life. So when you're looking at a shortage of this magnitude and the fact that families have to travel a long distance and, like you said earlier, rely on other families to help meet these needs, it's very difficult and challenging. So what we're doing with these families is we are, first off, encouraging them to contact their pediatrician. Always contact your doctor if there's any change at all in your child's nutrition needs, in terms of a shortage of formula. Make sure that your child gets what he or she needs. The other thing that we are asking families to do, or exactly what you said earlier, we're encouraging them to not make homemade formulas. Homemade formulas do not provide children with the nutritional needs they require. Do not water down the formulas, and be very cognizant when it comes to just changing your formula. Families that come into the WIC program can change their formula at any time as long as their child doesn't have a special nutritional need, such as an allergy or a digestive issue or even a metabolic disorder. So we work with them very closely to make sure the child is getting the nutrition that it needs. Now, for Southern Seven, as far as the number of children that are on our program that get the nutrition from infant formula, that changes daily. But it would be safe to say that, you know, roughly 75 to 80% of the children that participate in our program are on formula.
You know, I think there are going to be people out there. We got a caller before the show on this topic who say, why aren't parents breastfeeding? Why aren't mothers breastfeeding? But that's not an option for everyone, right? There could be medical reasons not to. Certainly adoptive parents, foster parents can't do that.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why a parent chooses or is not able to breastfeed. And again, that decision is between that parent and their pediatrician to determine what is best for them. So, you know, it's a constant struggle for families who aren't able to rely on the breastfeeding option. Formula in itself is very expensive and is oftentimes hard to get just on a regular basis, especially if you have a child that requires a special need formula. Oftentimes, those shelves, they become bare very quickly. So just to add this on top of that is even more challenging.
Well, I'm thankful that my own family is beyond that age. We did have to use formula for our kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm glad I'm not going through this. What resources do exist for families who are trying to track down formula at this time? Where should they go?
Well, like always, I said, you know, make sure they do contact their pediatrician first. But first and foremost, in addition to that, make sure that you are going to a reputable source for your child's formula. You want to make sure that you're not going to an outside the United States-based formula. Some of those can be considered counterfeit. They may have even fake labels on them or wrong use by date. So make sure that you're using an in-country or in United States formula as well. You can, you know, get more information from the CDC, from the FDA, from the USDA websites. But again, be very cognizant of what you are reading. If it sounds like, you know, too good to be true, not quite working for you, then chances are it's not. I want to reiterate to be very careful when it comes to trying to make your own baby formula. We have had people contact us about that. We do not encourage that. Baby formulas are specially designed to meet the needs of your child. You can't just whip that up in the kitchen at home. So we discourage using that and to talk with your pediatrician if there are any other options. We've also had some moms ask if they can use a friend's breast milk or a family member's breast milk. Once again, you know, it's a totally different situation than what your need is. So you want to make sure that in those situations, you talk with your doctor, you make sure it's somebody that you can trust to provide the nutritional needs that your child requires.
You know, last thing I want to ask you about, is there a sort of class or income dimension to this, the impacts of this being felt, right? I mean, about half the infant formula in the U.S. goes through this federal WIC program, and obviously people with lower income maybe can't travel 3 hours to, you know, another town to look for formula.
Yeah, right from the start, if we have a family that's in the WIC program, they're already having a financial need. That's why they are in the program and rely on it so heavily. The WIC program actually works with families through education and other information resources. So it's not just about getting food. There are other things that go into that program. But going back to the original thought, you know, again, we are dealing with individuals that are dealing with an income challenge. Generally, for a family of four, you can make up to about $48,000 a year and still qualify for WIC. And oftentimes, these families are even on other programs. But when those other programs are depleted, just as they are right now, it makes it difficult. So it's one of those things, if you have a family that's close to you that, you know, is struggling, try to help them out. You know, offer any support that you can give to them. You know, see if you can run the store for them and see if there's anything on the shelves there. Something else that families can do is they can also call their supplier ahead of time. If they, you know, use Kroger or Walmart or whomever it might be, before making that 20, 30, 40-mile trek, make a phone call, see if those supplies are there. If not, kind of keep a little bit of a mental record of that and let your WIC provider know that particular store is struggling as well. Because it's not just, you know, the stores having the problem. It's the supply chain. It's us making sure that our families have what they need. The list kind of comes around in a circle. So it's important to make sure we have that information. So just be cognizant of that. One thing we are asking people to do, it's very easy to go, okay, well, I'm at the store and I see 3 cans. So I'm going to stock up. Remember, you're not the only one going through this problem. So take what you need and use it, you know, as you need to. But be thinking there are other people out there that are struggling as well. We, like I say, we especially see that in the Southern Seven region and all throughout Southern Illinois.
Yeah, that's good advice. It's just like the toilet paper with everyone else a couple of years ago. Don't take all the last rolls. Take what you need.
Right. I mean, the administration as well as the USDA are working on this very diligently to do what they can in order to get these supply chains going. I know they have gone to, you know, other manufacturers and amped up production as well. So it's something that, you know, hopefully we will get through rather quickly. It's just going to take time and patience on everybody's part to get us through it.
Nothing says patience like a newborn baby that's hungry. So, all right, Shawn
no,
Ryan.
I understand, yeah.
Shawn Ryan, I know
you're. I know.
I know your time is limited. So, Shawn Ryan with the Southern 7 Health Department, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting us. We appreciate it.
All right, we're joined now by two additional guests to talk about the supply chain. We were just talking about that and some of the business aspects of what's behind this shortage. Gertrude Panerselvam is an associate professor in the School of Business at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. Her teaching focus is supply chain management. Gertrude, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
Also with us is Ursula Sullivan, an associate professor of business at Northern Illinois University. Her research and teaching focus on marketing strategy. Ursula, thank you for being here as well.
Sure. Thanks for the invitation.
And listeners, once again, if you have experience with the baby formula shortage, we want to hear your stories. 800-222-9455 is the number to call. 800-222-9455. So Gertrude, I want to ask you about this supply chain issues. This is a phrase that has really become popularized in America in the last couple of years. It's been used to explain these rising prices, shipping delays, and empty grocery store shelves with regard to the formula. What in this case does that mean, supply chain issues?
Couple of things, right? One is the manufacturing lead time to produce the formula, and the other is the shipping lead time. And both add to how long it takes once it's produced to reach the store. That's one part of it. The other part of it is the shortage that exists in the general supply chain because of the pandemic and not being able to the lack of ingredients, the shortage of the ingredients that need to go into these special formulas, that also is affected. Third part is the lack of capacity. Or the lack of excess capacity to adjust to changing demand or adjust to disruption. And here I think it's a trifecta of all these three things that has resulted in this enormous shortage.
Yeah, that sort of just-in-time manufacturing process that everyone's gone to. Ursula, let me ask you, is there anything that strikes you as unusual about this U.S. formula recall in particular compared to other ones we've seen in the past?
It seems to me that one of the things that's going on is, of course, the consolidation that's present in this market. Consolidation goes on in many, many areas. But what I've seen are some reports where only the top three companies that are in the market hold close to 80% of that market. So that means there's not a lot of wiggle room. Even if there was extra capacity at the manufacturing facilities, the fact that they are dominated by just three major firms is going to be a problem.
So Gertrude Panerselvam, can I ask you a little more to talk about that just in time? I've read that some of this baby formula shortage can be traced back to the beginning of the pandemic, that like so many other products, toilet paper, people might remember seeing empty freezer cases of meat and certain products like that at the beginning of the pandemic. But for whatever reason, it's never really recovered since then. And then we had that factory shut down, and we can talk about that. But that this is really a problem that traces back 2 years in its roots.
Right. You know, and I'm glad you brought up that 2020. Part of what companies depend on, is the ability to forecast demand, right? So in the early 2020, when people were stocking up on baby food, there was an increase in demand that showed up. But then that dropped down as people consumed what they stocked, but we also have to keep in mind that there's a shelf life problem with a formula, not unlike toilet paper. So you have, and then the birth rate in 2022 went up, I think about 9%. And to top it all off, more women have been choosing alternate ways to feed their infant for health reasons as well as for working family reasons, right? So all this resulted in the past 2 years in great oscillation in what companies observe as a demand pattern.
That's very interesting.
When they see demand going down, they shut down, they reduce production, but it's very hard to ramp up production at the same rate. So that's the bite in this kind of sophisticated production facility. You cannot ramp up production on a whim.
Yeah.
So we were already seeing shortages when the recall hit, right?
Yeah, that's fascinating because the U.S. birth rate's a pretty stable number when you're looking at supply and demand, although the pandemic shock was one, and then, as you say, the birth rate went up. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. We're speaking with Professors Gertrude Panerselvam from the Southern Illinois University Edwardsville School of Business and Ursula Sullivan from Northern Illinois University, professor in the School of Business there. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. More to come. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the national shortage of baby formula, which has parents scrambling to figure out how to feed their children. Some are driving hours, if they can, recruiting friends and family to track down certain brands. We're talking specifically now about the sort of business and supply chain and consolidation aspects of this. We're speaking with Professor Gertrude Panerselvam from the Southern Illinois University Edwardsville School of Business and Professor Ursula Sullivan from Northern Illinois University's School of Business. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. We'd love to hear if you have been on the hunt for baby formula, maybe for your own child, for a friend or relative, a grandbaby in your life. 800-222-9455. What are you seeing out there? Ursula Sullivan, let me ask you, you mentioned earlier the consolidation in the industry. And can you talk more about that specifically as it relates to, you know, when Abbott Nutrition had to shut down that plant in Michigan, why that was so destabilizing for the entire industry?
Well, first of all, just looking at the industry, it's very brand focused, right? So babies are given a specific brand, and often that formula comes either given in the hospital or given by the pediatrician. And so the baby gets used to that brand. And so parents they won't change because it's what the baby is getting their nutrition from. And so you don't want to shift anything around to disturb the baby's growth or, you know, the way, especially if the baby is sleeping well, doing well, thriving, you don't want to mess with that equation at all. So when and since Abbott holds somewhat some measures around 43% of the market, they have the largest contract with WIC that you were talking with Shanna about earlier. So when that facility goes out of commission, you can't just substitute other product for it. In fact, you have to have an FDA approved manufacturing facility in order to, you know, back up any supply that's missing from that facility. So, and it's not very often that you've got those just hanging around. As Gertrude mentioned earlier, the capacity is just not available for that. So that's an Abbott's case. Now you have Gerber, you have the other big name is Enfamil. And so those are companies that are owned by European companies. They're not, Abbott's the only US company that's actually manufacturing the product, at least as a large player in the market. So now you have European companies involved, and their facilities are here, and very little is actually brought in. I believe it's 98% of the production of the product of baby formula that is consumed in the US, 98% of it is actually made in the US. So you don't even have the global supply chain to allow you to back up that supply. So again, very few companies participating, very few facilities because of the need for scale in order to keep prices down. This is a mature market. You're not going to find a lot of a lot more investment than is needed being put into the market, because it's just not going to be profitable, especially in this kind of a mature market. So you're seeing the consolidation continues and will probably come down to maybe just three large global operators. That's typically the kind of the that's the formula for success in a marketplace. So you're going to continue to have these issues. And I don't see anything in the future changing that, because again, the birth rate is generally going down in the US and in developed markets. So this isn't a great investment for a lot of companies to actually put their money into.
Yeah, a mature market. I've heard the term secular decline in the demand here.
Yep.
Gertrude Panerselvam, I mean, doesn't that mean that there is a, you know, supply and demand sort of basic economics case that these companies, if they are maximizing shareholder value, they should not be investing in expanding capacity if there is going to be this secular decline and it's not a sort of a growth market, although that obviously conflicts with the needs of a lot of parents right now.
Right. That's true. But also, you know, to add on to what Ursula said, a large portion of the demand for these three manufacturers come from the WIC contracts, right? So that's about 50% of their market. So they have the stable demand and the ability to predict this demand based on census and government data. So it's well known. They can predict very, very well into the future. But by the same token, because they get most of their demand from WIC and that is subsidized, there is a barrier to entry. So you have to make that investment in order to meet the government's needs, but also then you use that to expand your market because you have the name brand in the shelf. So expensive, sophisticated investment, no one's going to enter the market. So to Ursula's point, we are going to see more consolidation because there are barriers to entry into the market. But at the same time, we don't have enough flexibility to afford defects. You know, if toilet paper, there was a defect in that production, we can make it up, we can stock it in the shelf. But with this, when we lose a large capacity, it is very expensive. The impact of that loss is very high. And I think that's what we're seeing now. So how do we encourage investment and maintenance of production facility so we meet the demand that's going to be almost quite stable in this mature market is the question, I think, for future.
Yeah. And Ursula, just about 30 seconds, maybe a minute left in our conversation. But do you think what is the role for the government here in terms of, you know, maybe FDA regulation? It seems
I think they're going to start working on it right now. Abbott has a facility in Ireland. They say they're going to start to, that's FDA approved, that they can start bringing in product from there. But quite honestly, I mean, the European market, where many of the rest of the manufacturers are actually headquartered, their plants are probably just as good, if not better in some regards, to what the FDA requires. If there was some kind of reciprocity that would be available so that, you know, European right. manufacturers that have been approved and are monitored by their European equivalent of the FDA would also be approved for supply into the US. That might be a way to alleviate any issues and also be able to take advantage of global capacity as opposed to just US capacity.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank Ursula Sullivan from the Northern Illinois University School of Business and Gertrude Pounder-Selvam from SIU Edwardsville's School of Business. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.